What's happened there?
It's George Hussey, Major Scott's bailiff.
Dead?
Why wouldn't he be? 3 weeks upside down in a bog hole with 100 weight of stones round his neck.
Don't look, Billy. It's not for you to see.
I've seen men dead before.
That's a terrible death to mete out to any living man.
What can you expect with Major Scott evicting in all directions?
That's no reason for shoving a bailiff down a bog hole. That'll settle enough.
Settle the bailiff.
Welcome back to BCFM's Politics Show with Labour Party activist Mel Sainsbury and me, Tony Gosling. The last Trump, his call for an arms race with Russia. Will it end? And if so, where? Trump's state of the disunion, the wall, and ramping up the tension in the arms race. It doesn't matter what people vote for, he says us. America will never be a socialist country. Why is that? Also, Venezuela, the elected President Maduro is condemned both in the UK and the US. What did he do wrong? And what does the favourite to be the next President of Europe, he's not elected of course, have to say about Alexis Tsipras, the Greek Prime Minister who's supporting Maduro? Who is this guy, Manfred Weber? Next President of Europe, who is he anyway? And a war of words between the French and Italian government, not seen since the days of Mussolini, apparently. Why are the Italian government finding common cause with the Gilets Jaunes, the protesters out week after week on the streets of France? Our sister show Dialects here on BCFM on Tuesdays at noon. This week, Licorice Heaven. All about licorice. There's a little business over in Swindon which has started up. And also, on a more serious note, vaccines with anti-Big Pharma campaigner Hope Hartley. You can listen here at BCFM 93.2 at noon next Tuesday or download the show from dialectradio.co.uk right now. I'm also joined by Fabian Breckles. He's staying on for another hour or so, maybe not the whole hour, but certainly to discuss Trump. Certainly, we'll start though with you, Mal. Donald Trump's State of the Union, it's almost as if he's at war with Congress. He's only, imagine what would have happened if they still had a shutdown, this battle going on between the White House and Congress, and he's trying to do his State of the Union address. You can almost imagine Congress stopping him going in to do it because they're so annoyed with his war proposal.
We are so astonished that Trump is still where he is.
Tell me about it. How
did this man get to be? I mean, he didn't win the popular vote, of course. But, you know, basically there's a lot of talk about how the focusing on the swing states and the people responsible for that, we all know the stories about Cambridge Analytica, are the ones that actually focused on people for the Brexit vote as well.
We've seen a lot of this recently, but at the end of the day, surely you can't say he didn't really win. He is president and you have to deal with him.
Well, the thing is, I mean, if I can just come in, the problem is the Americans' flawed voting system. I mean, I've been in electoral reform all my life, and Britain's first past the post voting system needs replacement with something that's more proportional. In America, they've got this electoral college system, which means that you can win enough electoral seats, you know, in the college and lose the popular vote and still end up as president.
But hang on, the Labour Party used to have an electoral college system as well, with the block votes from the trade unions.
That's not the same as using that to win general elections. I mean, this is the electoral college system we're talking about is each state having so many seats, which may not have necessarily changed. I mean, the only way for America's to have a proper democratic mandate for their presidents is to have one person, one vote. That's got to be the way it
works. I
want
to send out a ray of hope to people because, you know, this Trump era will end. It is dangerous. It is worrying. But, you know, as we speak, there are women and women of colour, which is fantastic. They're all positioning themselves into major senior posts and people are being elected. And it will come to an end. In a lot of ways, he's an idiot sort of figurehead that's been propped up by the Republicans. But now that, you know, the Democrats have actually got the majority now in the Senate House, haven't they?
Not the Senate. The Republicans, which I can't understand, actually increased their hold in the Senate. But the Democrats have the Congress.
They have the Congress, that's right. Yeah. So therefore, that's why this whole terrible sort of, you know, head-to-head came about, wasn't it? Mm. But, I mean, the man isn't capable of actually making proper decisions.
I'm just waiting. I mean, now that at least the Republicans have lost Congress, I'm just waiting for the guy to be impeached. I mean, you know, he's got to be the worst president I've ever witnessed or seen.
One of the things I'd just like to point out is when he goes in there and speaks to Congress, if you have a look at the picture of the American Congress, then there's a sort of backdrop. It's a kind of semicircle where there's a big stage and they all stand up there. And what you've got in front of you is four pillars. Well, at the very back is four pillars. Right in the middle is the flag of the United States, kind of turned on its end and up. But either side is a giant golden fasci, which are these, what the word fascism comes from, which is a load of sticks, axe and 13 rods, which are bound together. This is a symbol for strength in numbers. So if you've got 13 people together, they can do something which maybe one person on their own can't do. So it does rather bother me that there's this enormous fascist symbol in the middle of Congress as Trump is there giving this speech, Mel.
I know, it's very
boring. It's not just there, by the way. I had a little look. The George Washington statue at Virginia State Capitol in Richmond, Virginia, is a big statue of him. He's resting on one of these fasci, right? The Abraham Lincoln Memorial, where you can, many people have seen it, he's sitting down on a chair and he's got his hands up. He's got his hands on two fasci. So these are everywhere in American culture. They've been put there. There was a 10-cent coin, the dime, the Mercury dime from the 1940s. Which had a fasci on the back. It's also the emblem of the National Sheriff's Association in America, the emblem of the US National Guard, and the seal of the US Courts Administrative Office. So when I see Trump giving his speech there with this in the background, these two fasci in the background, I do wonder how far we've come since the Second World War. But anyway, I mean, this is just symbolism in the background, but there is something a little bit sinister about Trump too.
Well, there certainly is, and the fact that he's been placed in a position with his advisors around him, and we look to those advisors. You know, one of the billionaires, is he called Jeffrey Mercer, the one that bankrolls climate change denial? Mm-hmm. You know, it's all about Exxon and big business, isn't it? And we're battling here. We're battling with saving the planet, actually, because, you know, this Trump is actually, he's joining forces with people in Australia. There's a very strong anti-climatic change movement over there, and you know, the withdrawing from the Paris Agreement is appalling, isn't it? So yeah, he's not going to last much
are
longer.
Are there any treaties that Donald Trump has not pulled out of?
I can't think of any.
Very few. He seems to be pulling out of everything. I mean, it is actually alarming how things are going on in America.
It's a race. I mean, how many of the 18 things that he's in, court cases that are coming up, not court cases, but you know, he's been accused of all these different things. And how long can he hold them off with money? How many scandals can he hold off with money?
Well, it's interesting. Apparently, he almost channeled Nixon's State of the Union speech about, you know, saying people should sort of back off him, and then Nixon ended up forced out. Hopefully Trump will be forced out.
Anyway, I mean, we must be balanced on this programme. We always try and be. So we've got to give Donald his say.
Donald.
So here is Donald Trump. So I've got a few clips from his State of the Union speech this week. And firstly, he talks about the wall, the notorious wall.
My administration has sent to Congress a common sense proposal to end the crisis on the southern border. It includes humanitarian assistance, more law enforcement, drug detection at our ports, closing loopholes that enable child smuggling, and plans for a new physical barrier or wall to secure the vast areas between our ports of entry. In the past, most of the people in this room voted for a wall, but the proper wall never got built. I will get it built. This is a smart, strategic, see-through steel barrier, not just a simple concrete wall. It will be deployed in the areas identified by the border agents as having the greatest need. And these agents will tell you where walls go up, illegal crossings go way, way down.
Yes, this wall is going on and on, isn't it? I think he's backing down a bit, actually, because the funding hasn't been there so as easily as he expected.
But a smart wall.
Oh, it's a smart wall. Yes, it's going to be probably one of those virtual walls.
Something called see-through steel. See-through steel.
Yeah, I mean, he's talking nonsense. I mean, obviously it means a sort of a fence, like sort of, you know, how you get a sort of wire fences and sort of... But see-through steel, you can't see glass. You can see through clear plastic. You can see through steel. Is a solid.
Yeah, but
thing.
He's talking about a fence, isn't he? Probably
he's talking about a fence, basically. And also, he's also admitting it's not going to go across end to end.
Whole
so
extent.
It's going to waste a bucket load of money that could be better spent tackling poverty in America. And it's still going to have gaps in it, and that's where if people are that determined, you know. You know, they'll still get through those different gaps. If you really want to cut down migration or economic migration, you need to address the issues
that are prompting those people. That's
people
right.
Want to leave. Make if people's lives are good enough where they live, they won't need to be to leave.
I do
if they're
you know,
being driven out by war, they're driven being driven out by poverty or economic collapse. Then
actually, I mean, I visited Mexico. Gosh, this is probably 20 years ago, and met some of the people who were heading up to go into the United States. And I said, well, why are you doing it? It's aventura, they said. It's an adventure. Mm. And also, they were making, the idea was to come make some money. You know, pure and simple, much more money to be made in America than there was in Mexico. So you can't really blame them. I suppose it's a similar situation with those people in Africa who are coming to Europe to try and make money, Fabian.
Yeah, and also climate change could make certain parts of the planet uninhabitable, which is only going to put more pressure on migration, because people are then going to be wanting to leave the bits that are no longer habitable, no longer able to sustain any kind of agriculture, and put even more pressure on the bits that remain habitable, just about.
I mean, the problems of displaced people are being caused by the nations that are complaining the most about having to receive displaced people. You know, you have to tackle... It's no good the last to plaster, isn't it?
No.
Of trying to do that. You have to actually tackle... I mean, Germany was fantastic and has taken in over a million immigrant people, you know, in need, fleeing from terrible situations.
Okay, so this is the chance to take a step back from all this. What should be happening in the world to make sure that those places that are becoming impossible for people to live in, where they have to go somewhere else just to make a living, what can we do to make those places livable again?
Such a huge question, isn't it?
Well, perhaps if we, I mean, it's like Venezuela could go down the same route, because obviously they're now, it's quite clear that America's after intervening in America, in Venezuela, sorry, because they want the oil.
And the largest resource of crude oil in the whole of the world. Funny, isn't it? I don't think the United States has got a very good reputation for what doing things in South America.
We're going to get into Venezuela in a minute. But this question of who is responsible for making a mess in these countries, a lot of the time, you're right, I'm quite sure. It is big Western countries, powerful Western countries.
We shouldn't do
interfere.
Well, I think the neoliberalist model has got to stop. We're coming to crisis points in economically, climatically, in all these different ways, and it's not working. Capitalism isn't working. So I really think that we're coming up to crunch time, because now we have the internet where people are becoming more and more aware. And I'm actually putting my trust in the next generations. I think we have great hope. And there's something called Extinction Rebellion, isn't there? Have you seen this?
Yeah.
The youngster that's talking about this. And it's spreading everywhere very quickly indeed. And I think the next generation who's going to have to live with the legacies of these terrible things that have been going on, you know, the answers are there.
Well, what irritates me is Trump's talking there about things like drug detection at our ports. Well, what about drug detection at US military bases, where many people believe most of the drugs around the world world are being flown around by the military. I mean, we had the whole business of Oliver North being prosecuted for this. Then he was pardoned by it. This is the Iran-Contra affair. Yeah. Then he was pardoned for it. So I think maybe he's looking in the wrong place if he wants to stop the importation of illegal drugs.
And maybe America needs to learn the lesson. I mean, what happened during Prohibition? You know, when alcohol was banned, you had criminals making an absolute bucket load of money trading in illegal alcohol. And now, you know, so that's now taxed and regulated and controlled. Maybe we need to think long and hard about
what we seriously do. Need to decriminalise drugs, without a doubt. All drugs. Portugal has done it, and it's just working beautifully,
well,
isn't it?
We were doing film reviews.
Decriminalise it, not sort of make it sort of, you know, so it's okay to be, you know, but, you know, decriminalise it. So it's regulated, it's dealt with as a medical condition. If you've got a drug addiction problem, it needs to be dealt with as a medical issue, not a criminal thing.
There's a fantastic old black and white film called Key Largo, where, and it's all to do with drug smuggling in Florida, with Humphrey Bogart and various other, James Cagney, I think, isn't it? And there is a perfect example of the prospect of the ending of Prohibition is put on this guy who's making a load of money out of Prohibition, a gangster. And it's the most horrifying concept in the world to him. He starts banging his fist on the table, goes nuts. Now, you can't end Prohibition. And of course they did, eventually. Now maybe it's time to, you know, take the whole ending of drug prohibition more seriously and just starting to regulate it properly. Anyway, we're getting off the topic slightly, and we will be getting to Venezuela in a minute, I promise you. But before that, we're going to hear what Trump in his State of the Union address said about NATO and Russia. I mean, that's basically us, folks. We're NATO, and bear in mind that we're a bit closer to Russia than he is.
For years, the United States was being treated very unfairly by friends of ours, members of NATO. But now we have secured, over the last couple of years, more than $100 billion of increase in defense spending from our NATO allies. They said it couldn't be done. As part of our military buildup, the United States is developing a state-of-the-art missile defense system. Under my administration, we will never apologize for advancing America's interests. For example, decades ago, the United States entered into a treaty with Russia in which we agreed to limit and reduce our missile capability. While we followed the agreement and the rules to the letter, Russia repeatedly violated its terms. It's been going on for many years. That is why I announced that the United States is officially withdrawing from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, or INF Treaty. Perhaps we really have no choice. Perhaps we can negotiate a different agreement, adding China and others. Or perhaps we can't, in which case we will outspend and out-innovate all others by far.
Well, he's getting big rounds of applause there, but he's basically announcing a new
side of the.
He's announcing a new arms race. Really,
it's insane. I mean, I've always been a multilateralist. I think, you know, the whole idea that, you know, we won't nuke them because they'll nuke us back is probably makes sense. But you only need so many missiles for that to be effective. This is talking. I mean, he's talking about spending billions and billions on more and more and more armaments. You know, far more than you'd actually need to eradicate the entire, vaporize the entire planet. It's just completely insane, and it's just a.
Oh, it's just morally, chilling. It's
morally
chilling.
It's a morally indefensible use of money that needs to be spent dealing with poverty, dealing with climate change, dealing with
Well, when I think about his
human needs,
his pussy grabbing fingers hovering over the red button, it's absolutely horrifying, isn't it? But he does seem to be slowing down that delivery in his voice. There's something on YouTube at the moment that shows him as a sort of drunken uncle, because if you slow it down any more, it makes even less sense of what he's saying. It's just
yeah. The Russians, by the way, are saying that everyone's got it all wrong. That actually the missiles that Trump is talking about don't actually violate the INF treaty, and you can come and have a good old look at them if you want. Russia demonstrates the missile, claiming no violation of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. On the 23rd of January, a Russian defense ministry displayed in an expo center in Moscow its new 9M729 missile, claiming, contrary to US assessments, its characteristics do not violate the terms of the treaty. So who do you believe on this one, Mal? I mean, the Russians are saying we're not violating the treaty. The Americans are saying, yes, you are, we're pulling out.
Well, I don't know enough about it to have a proper answer, actually. But, I mean, if I had to choose between Putin and Trump, it's a difficult one, isn't it?
I don't think we really trust either of them.
No,
What's interesting, though, the irony with all of this, is it's alleged that Putin, you know, there was Russian meddling in the American elections.
Yes.
In which case, they've now got someone who's, you know, wants an arms race with them, which is going to cost them a bucket load of money. Is this really what they wanted? Or what's going on?
Well, look, surely
the way
just
to deal with
this
treaties
story
is to
up
have
on the screen here is the Chinese are saying the Russians are correct. They do not violate the INF treaty. So, I mean, the Chinese aren't ignoring all of this, of course. They're saying, well, hang on a minute, what are you doing? You're trying to start a World War III. Mm-hmm. The Russians are right, so stop messing about. So I'll put a link. I tell you what, people want to make their own mind up. I'll put a link up on our show page to this evidence the Russians have put forward that they're not breaking this treaty. Anyone would think, Mal, that Trump actually wants a war. Is that feasible that he would be so bonkers?
I wouldn't put anything past him, to be quite honest. You know, the man thinks that he's completely sort of, you know, right about everything, doesn't he?
Yeah.
The whole idea about nuclear deterrent, we know that Corbyn, our leader, is actually anti-Trident. And when you think about it, only a genocidal, insane person would actually press a button. And if you got to the point where you were pressing a button, then obviously it wasn't a deterrent and it didn't work anyway. You know, there's here in Bristol, we have a huge sort of, you know, BAC in the arms thing. And there's a huge movement within our party, in actual fact, to turn all those workers, not lose jobs doing those kind of things, but to turn it into, you know, different ways of creating energy, but certainly not weapons
in a way we did that, didn't we, in the 1970s with Concorde, turning something which was all based on military technology and military research into a cutting edge bit of civilian.
Well, I remember my late father telling me about what happened in World War II. Both sides had gas bombs. Neither side used them because they knew that the second they started dropping them on the Allies would drop them back. And that sort of, you know,
how many countries don't have a nuclear?
Potentially very unstable countries do have them.
Yeah. Very frightening,
like
indeed.
India, Pakistan both have them.
The Israelis have them. Mm. And there's a lot of talk about conflict. We were just hearing last week by one of their ministers saying that if there was any necessity, they would not flinch to use brute force against Iran. Now, that's a nuclear threat that they're making, potentially, the Israelis. Then there's also, as you say, India and Pakistan, North Korea as well, which mm-hmm. seems to have gone to the back burner. But this is, I mean, it is worrying that suddenly it's becoming almost more possible for nuclear war to happen.
And another thing to bear in mind is we've got a much longer history of intervening. You know, a former global power, we've got a much longer history of intervening that a lot of countries don't have.
I just find it so worrying, actually, that we've had, you know, the Berlin Wall came down, the Cold War ended.
A peace dividend. They said there's going to be a peace dividend now. This is the era of the 1980s, you know. Where is this peace dividend?
What's happening? It's all reversing. And I think the hand of big business is behind it, to be quite honest.
What?
And those global concerns about arms, of course, and oil, all of those things, they're the ones that are controlling what's happening in the world at the moment.
Because people say, many people say, and you chat to people, they will tell you, nobody wants a world war. Well, I'm afraid there are some people that do, and they want a world war for profit, because they can make a lot of money out of a war, and they don't necessarily care about millions of people dying. Even I can remember back in I wasn't around, but back in the Cuban Missile Crisis, there was one of the American generals that said we could win a nuclear war with Russia with no more than expectable losses. Now those expectable losses were something like 17 million, they reckoned 17 million people would die, but we can win. And so that was Cuba back in 1962, and this does seem to be a little bit a similar sort of moment, actually, to do with moving the missile defense shield closer and closer to Russia, both around the east of Russia and around the west of Russia, coming up to Lithuania, I think it's in the Baltic states, and also in Poland. They're just about to move them into Poland. So we're coming up to another kind of Cuba moment.
It's rather tense, isn't it? My daughter's just come back from Cuba, and she's funny, my daughter. She says she used to be a bit 5% conservative, and she said she's increased to between 10 and 15% now. She said, socialism doesn't work, Mum. And I said, that's not socialism, it's communism. She said, well, you can't buy anything from the shops, but that's to do with the sanctions from the US, isn't it? But on the other hand, nobody's homeless on the streets in Cuba. Was it 1962 that the UK, the US decided not to trade any more with this island nation, and those sanctions are going on and on.
I think the thing to bear in mind, though, you know, we talk about Cuba, it has got issues. There are human rights issues, there isn't the religious freedom that there should be there, for example. But also, you know, we're not talking about, you know, Labour isn't talking about a, you know, communist system. Even Jeremy Corbyn at conference was talking about a mixed economy. So, you know, the obvious monopolies, water, rail, back in public ownership.
Hang on. Buses.
Buses
are a big issue in this city.
In this city. So
it's an issue that the Metro Mayor doesn't want to come and talk about
NHS
on this programme.
Well, it's a real blow for the area that we ended up with a Conservative Metro Mayor, because he's obviously sort of ideologically opposed to actually using any of the powers that he could actually have to regulate the bus.
Anyway, we're getting on to the topic of socialism, which Donald Trump is talking about. But before we do, I'll just say, I will put a link up on our show page at thisweek.org.uk to some evidence about this Russian missile. Because I'm looking at it, it does look as if the Russians are saying, here, look, you know, this is not violating the treaty. What are you talking about, Donald Trump? And of course, Trump hasn't been to this conference to look at this missile to see if it does violate the treaty. He's just been told, oh, it violates the treaty, Donald, sign here. This is the war. The war has got to start as soon as possible. Anyway, so let's have a listen now to what Donald Trump had to say about socialism.
2 weeks ago, the United States officially recognized the legitimate government of Venezuela and its new president, Juan Guaido. We stand with the Venezuelan people in their noble quest for freedom, and we condemn the brutality of the Maduro regime, whose socialist policies have turned that nation from being the wealthiest in South America into a state of abject poverty and despair.
Sorry, that was actually, it's supposed to carry on and talk about socialism, but what do you make of Venezuela? What he's got to say about that, Mal?
Well, I don't believe a word of it. I actually think that the, you know, that it's a coup. It's the United States are moving in there because they want control of the oil.
Yeah.
And I think they have caused that situation for those poor, poor people and driven them to the most desperate poverty. There was a word that was used to describe it, screaming a screaming poverty, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think there's
to
something
to make the economy scream.
Yeah, and I think it's absolutely disgraceful, and it looks a little bit familiar to me.
That's what they did in Argentina. Yeah,
Argentina.
The IMF and the Americans said we're going to make the economy scream.
That's right.
And basically, what happened is all of the money that people have put into their savings, you know, whatever, tens of thousands of Argentinian whatever they are, suddenly disappeared, and people lost all their savings overnight. So
basically,
that's how
that's
you do
theft.
It.
That's theft, basically, isn't it?
Yes. And Chile, of course, another example, but not a very good reputation for what they've been doing in South America and Central America.
Anyway, so let's just carry on with this, with this Trump speech and hear what he had to say about the socialists, by the way.
Here in the United States, we are alarmed by the new calls to adopt socialism in our country. America was founded on liberty and independence, and not government coercion, domination, and control. We are born free, and we will stay free. Tonight, we renew our resolve that America will never be a socialist country.
I mean, I found this one of the most bizarre bits of the State of the Union. I didn't see it reported elsewhere, but what is it, Fabian, what is it that Donald Trump has got so much against socialism? I mean, anyway, if America decides it wants to vote for the Socialist Party, which actually the Democrat Party is quite socialist, why can't it do so?
Well, it's obviously Donald Trump doesn't believe in democracy, and he obviously thinks he can, you know, the Republicans just want to hang on to power. That's why they're doing things like voter suppression, trying to stop, reduce polling stations, gerrymander the voting system in America and stuff like that. It's all sort of typical right-wing tricks to try and hang on to power. But you look at the consequences. They've got a for-profit private health system, which is actually some of the conservatives actually want to impose on us. We're already seeing, some of the things we used to be able to rely on the NHS
for. Oliver Letwin actually wrote the book about how to privatise the National Health Service.
Yeah, defund and divest and then force people out and then sell it off, yeah. And the consequence is what you get in America, where you get people patient dumping. You know, if somebody's policy runs out, you just stick them on the streets. And if you actually do get, through... Your treatment, the bills are absolutely enormous because it's awful.
Mal, why are the Americans so afraid of socialism?
I've absolutely no idea. I mean,
they're not told the truth about democratic socialism.
No,
I
they're not.
I shouldn't say the Americans.
The gap between rich and poor.
I shouldn't say the Americans, should I? Because it's the American media and political class that have a big thing about socialism.
The gap between the rich and the poor is the greatest in the United States. I think we're about second, aren't we? And I think the most equal society is Japan. Am I talking... the right statistics here, but I mean it's obscene to see that the poverty in America is disgraceful. The homelessness.
So is the poverty here.
Yes, it's getting worse and worse. I was talking to a lady yesterday, a 99-year-old lady. She was born in 1918, and she had scarlet fever when she was 10 years old, and she said how it had affected the rest of her life. She'd been an invalid, funnily enough, the rest of her life. She'd had a heart attack when she was 19. But she talked to me. She's a fantastic Labour-voting, Corbyn-supporting woman, and she talked to me about what it was actually like to have those kind of childhood illnesses. And we talked about how rickets has returned, malnutrition. Yeah. A lot of childhood diseases are creeping back now because we are, we're basically second only to America in our, because socialism is about the redistribution of wealth, isn't it?
Yeah.
And about a fairer, and that, because Jeremy Corbyn isn't anywhere near, he's a democratic socialist, he's nowhere near the sort of communist thing, is he?
It's about a fairer, more equal society. So you get rid of the absolute you tackle the absolute poverty, homelessness, you give everyone, and if you do that, make everyone's lives more secure, because, if you're mortgaged up to your eyeballs and you're a contract worker, you're only, you're only one couple of pages.
You were saying, Mal, you were saying something about food banks earlier as well, weren't you?
Oh, it's dreadful. It was announced yesterday, wasn't it, that the government have advised job centres now that they are not allowed to refer people to food banks. This was normally the standard thing once you'd sanctioned somebody for the next 100 days because they'd missed their telephone appointment by 5 minutes.
Well, the bus was late.
And then you could refer them on to where they could actually apply for a hardship loan, which had to be paid back at a rate so much more than students have to pay their, you know, rates. Absolutely disgraceful, pushing people into more poverty. And I don't understand. It's insane to think that this is some sort of incentive to find work, because going back to the working poor again, you know, if you're just scrabbling and galloping on the spot to just pay your bills, and we're talking about the working poor in the sense that when I was talking to this lady yesterday, her father was a miner and her husband was a miner, and she talked to me about some of those working conditions. You worked at 12 hours a day, more, and you still were hungry. You still didn't have enough, you know, to live properly. And that's what's happening today.
I was, I now work in the public sector, have done for years, but in the very early 90s, I was living in Bristol, and I was, you know, temping and trying to claim benefit. And I was actually finding, if I was, you know, doing the honest thing of declaring the couple of days' work I got here or there, they'd take more off me in benefits than I'd actually earned by actually getting out of bed and going and doing some work for somebody. And, you know, that kind of experience stays with you. I was actually having to go for between the sort of various benefit offices to make sure everything that I was entitled to came through. And it was, I know how badly I was treated then. Now it's far, far worse.
It's so punitive. And I mean, it's all when we look at how universal, universal credit is, it's been an absolute disaster. And Labour is going to scrap it. They're going to scrap the bedroom tax. We're going to stop this punishment of people. And now the Tories themselves have actually admitted how many deaths have been caused by their policies. Yeah,
but are you going to be able to persuade Mark Carney to invest money in this country so we create jobs? Because at the end of the day, that's actually what we need, is secure, well-paid jobs. And that seems to be the thing that nobody can achieve. Not a Blair government, not a Major government, not a Thatcher government, none of them.
The Blair government did a lot of good, and it introduced things like the living wage, the minimum wage.
No, but there's always been this massive pool of unemployed people. And that's what you've got to get. If you get rid of that, then surely you've actually achieved something.
Well, let me just say that the idea that we have the lowest unemployment for however many years, those figures include all the people that have died within 6 weeks to 3 months of being found fit to work. They include all the people who have been forced onto work programs of whatever kind that were completely
zero contracts.
Yeah, and the gigging economy and all the rest of it. So in actual fact, they're complete. There's stats and there's stats. But I remember after the last election, there was a self-congratulatory BBC. It was actually on Radio 4 saying, "Oh, in this month, another 38,000 people have, found jobs." That it's a lie. So, and also the thing is, Tony, isn't it true that we have to work less and less? We need the 4-day week with automating, and you know, things are changing now. People are working from home. We need less of that, and we need more quality of life. So I would really like to talk to all the fantastic things that are going on with unconditional universal benefit, where we get rid of the stigma of the
citizens' income.
Systems.
You mean?
Yeah.
I think it is something we've got to explore, and I think if we tied it into a progressive taxation system that wasn't punitive, what didn't kill aspiration. You got, so progressive taxation shouldn't kill aspiration.
No.
But if you had tied it into a progressive taxation system, if you tied it into the absorbed all the benefits, most of the benefits into it as well, you know, it could be a way of ensuring that, you know, without all the bureaucracy of having to, you know, apply for all these benefits online and all the bureaucracy of trying to cheat people out of benefits, if you just paid an amount that actually got people out of absolute destitute, that guaranteed you were safe from destitution.
Yes.
I mean, I almost hesitate to bring up the subject of suicide, because, and particularly Bristol University suicides, because if you're looking at what's going on in society, things are getting worse, basically, and pressure is being put on people financially in all sorts of other ways.
Yes.
I also noticed this week, in fact, yesterday, a news story about life expectancy. The rise in life expectancy in Scotland has ground to a halt. So It's been inching up and inching up and inching up every single year since World War II. Now it's just levelling out and they believe starting to fall.
But also life expectancy is hugely different in different parts of Bristol.
Yes.
The wealthier
different
areas
parts
you
of the
live
country as well.
And different parts of the country, poorer areas, your life expectancy is a lot lower than in richer areas. That tells you all you need to know about we can't leave this, we have to address it.
So what's the reason for life expectancy falling?
Well, because you have you have more health problems, obviously, because you're not having, you know, your economic situation means that you're not able to look after yourself as well, or your family, or to be, you know, the worst housing situation. Because I can't believe how we have come to the situation in Bristol where you walk in the city centre in the morning and there are bodies lying all around the harbour side, huddled in sleeping bags. It's just absolutely disgraceful. And what this is, we're supposed to be a Labour council. And we're not actually looking at...
Whoa, hang on a minute. You can't really blame the Labour Council for this, because we've lost about 75 pence in the pound
of the money we were getting.
Anyway, so we're doing the best we can with the finances
we've got.
This is an example of socialist thinking,
right? Now, I would argue that socialist thinking is transferring the sort of thinking that you would have within a family, like caring for children, etc., to a wider society.
Yeah.
Where you say, well, here's a very successful child. We can take something from them to give to some other child that's not so successful in order to give them both a feeling of some sort of equal value, that they're valued in the same sort of way. And I just don't think the American political class, I think a lot of ordinary Americans understand it, but the political class don't seem to get it at all. Anyway, let's just finish the Donald Trump segment, because that was just in a way I thought it'd be nice to just go into some of the ideas we have here in Britain that don't seem to get any traction whatsoever in the US. In fact, if you go back to, say, for example, to the 60s and 70s, I remember chatting to a lady here in Bristol who used to run Knightstone Housing. Before she was in chair of Knightstone Housing, she used to be in public housing, and she said by the end of the 1970s we'd built enough houses for everyone. So I left public housing. I was sort of astounded, really, to think that there was a house for absolutely everybody. And anyone that didn't have a house could just simply say, I'm homeless, and the council would give them a council flat.
And then along come council house sales, the right to buy, and that was deliberately run to destroy social housing, because councils weren't allowed to use the money they got from selling one house to go and build another replacement. They had to use the money to clear debts.
And what's happened, of course, that we did a Freedom of Information request, and of the 200 local authorities that replied to us, we discovered that about 75% of ex-social housing was actually owned by an absent landlord. Absolutely disgraceful.
So, socialism is about making sure everybody is valued. And what have you got to say about that, Donald Trump? And of course, he never gets asked that, because the American media never ask him it. So, anyway, let's have a listen now to the final, his sort of crescendo of Donald Trump's State of the Union speech.
We have not yet begun to dream. We must choose whether we are defined by our differences or whether we dare to transcend them. We must choose whether we squander our great inheritance, or whether we proudly declare that we are Americans. We do the incredible. We defy the impossible. We conquer the unknown. This is the time to reignite the American imagination. This is the time to search for the tallest summit and set our sights on the brightest star. This is the time to rekindle the bonds of love and loyalty and memory that link us together as citizens, as neighbors, as patriots. This is our future, our fate, and our choice to make. I am asking you to choose greatness. No matter the trials we face, no matter the challenges to come, we must go forward together. We must keep America first in our hearts. We must keep freedom alive in our souls. And we must always keep faith in America's destiny. That one nation, under God, must be the hope and the promise and the light and the glory among all the nations of the world. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless America. Thank you very much.
So that's the conclusion to Donald Trump's speech, State of the Union address in Congress between his two fasci, the little fascist symbols. The tallest summit, the brightest star, beginning to dream. It does sound a little bit Disney.
Well, I think whoever's doing the script writing here, it's absolutely sickening. I mean, Fabian and I were just listening to that and we literally had our fingers down our throats. It was disgusting, wasn't it?
It was borderline delusional.
Yes.
I mean, it was... If you really want to, you know, the American dream is supposed to be that, you know, anyone can grow up to be anything they want to be. Well, if you want to make that happen, you... tackle the poverty and the absolute poverty, you ensure that everyone gets a decent education.
It's about understanding the universal benefits of education, of healthcare, all of
universal healthcare. Yeah, so you don't have anyone going bankrupt if they
almost
cancer.
Like there is a sort of hypocrisy at the root of what he's saying here.
Grotesque
in that
hypocrisy.
We really care about people, is what he's saying. We care about people, but actually it's about survival of the fittest. So if you're really tough in business and ruthless, you can be successful. But unless you are, you're going to start sinking to the bottom. So there's something completely opposed in what he's saying.
I don't like the juxtaposition as well with the sort of the Christianity thing.
Well, as a Christian,
etc. And it's like, because he's already made money his god. You know,
yeah.
As you talk about the grotesque hypocrisy of the idiocy of this man, and the reason why he's been put into this position. And how he is a really serious worry and a threat to civilised people everywhere, I think.
So do you think God is listening to him, Fabian?
As a Christian, I just totally disown everything he stands for. You know, the Bible was very clear about, you know, defending, you know, looking after the poor, the vulnerable. You were supposed to look after people, and yet you have this American so-called religious right that is literally trampling on the weakest and the most vulnerable and giving tax cuts to the rich. Absolute antithesis of the gospel, of anything vaguely Christian.
Quite.
Yep. Total antithesis.
Yeah, something, yes, deeply hypocritical. But anyway, so that's... we don't have to endure that for another year, hopefully. But it is one of the things that's most concerning, I suppose, coming out of that whole speech, is really announcing this arms race.
Yeah. Terrifying.
I think we should move on now, though, to talk a bit more about Venezuela, because this came up, he mentioned it in the speech just then, and it also came up in Prime Minister's question in our very own parliament this week.
Apprentice. There can be no doubt that the people of Venezuela are really suffering. 40 of them were killed in recent protests, many more detained, and many are simply voting with their feet and leaving, those that can. What more can we do as a government to help these people? And does my right honourable friend agree with me that sanctions are still a valuable tool?
Well, what is happening in Venezuela is appalling. We have seen the suppression of democratic institutions and traditions, and we have seen 3 million people forced to leave their country and live as refugees. We and our EU partners have been clear that we need to put pressure on those around Maduro. We need to keep that pressure up, and we are looking at what further steps we can take to ensure peace and democracy, including through possible sanctions. It would be a help if in this House we could speak with a united voice, rather than have the leader of the opposition looking to Maduro's Venezuela as a role model for this country.
So that's
yet again another Tory lie. There's no way we're going down that road.
Absolutely not.
It's a complete, you know, it's just what the Tories always do. They lie. If they're not blaming other people for their own incompetence, they're telling out and out lies about everyone else.
But hang on, I mean, Maduro's proved he can't run the country.
Maybe he has, but that's one individual. I mean, that doesn't mean that, you know, we still need, you know,
I mean, do you think it was a fair election there, where he was re-elected as president?
I don't know enough about it, but all I know is that from past, you know, the history of how the US has moved into these countries and has actually forced all kinds of things against any sort of democracy, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the man has been forced into some terrible decisions.
Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, you know, the way, you know, and, you know, it, you know, we've got Saudi Arabia with a shocking human rights record and we sell them arms and they flatten Yemen. It's all a bit rich, you know. We have these, you know, American and British governments picking and choosing who they support and who they criticise. And if you don't like an election result, if you think there's something wrong about it, just declaring the person who has lost as the winner.
Well, this is all about apparently. This is apparently all about oil.
Of course,
many people are saying
it's
all about oil.
Of course, it is.
Of course, it's about oil. It's not about the Venezuelan people. They don't count. It's about, well, to the Americans, they don't count.
What I'll do, I mean, I was reading a fascinating article this week by a guy called William Engdahl, saying, "Is oil behind Washington's Venezuela coup madness?" And he's, I believe he's a Russian-speaking, German-born writer. And I'll put a link up to that on our show page at thisweek.org.uk. Because reading that, I just got a fascinating, I thought, fascinating insight into some of the financial motives behind the potential, why you might say, well, I actually don't like that president because he wants to keep the oil for himself, Mel.
I think so, but I mean, these right-wing forces, and I think America must be, now it's Mr. Trump has so publicly said that he doesn't want to have any sort of socialism at all, and basically they're motivated by, you know, evangelical right-wing forces that don't care about the lives of people, they don't care about women's rights, for instance, you know, as they jump on the trans wagon, they don't care about equality and fairness and justice for people as they move to smear a potential left-wing government, you know, with Jeremy Corbyn, with the idea that we're going down the path of Venezuela. How disgraceful.
Because this is one of the things, just to link some of these things together, because we've been hearing about Trump and the United States' dislike of socialism, and yet Jeremy Corbyn is a socialist who could actually be running this country. So I wonder if there's a motive for the US actually to be trying to discredit Corbyn in one way or another, because we've seen all sorts of attacks on him by the press, etc. And I suppose before we, I mean, we're getting near the end now, but I think we should have a little look at this week, because the influence of the media in Venezuela too, they've only got one state-run channel, which is called Telesur, which has also an English version, and there's very, very, very interesting coverage that's been coming from Telesur English. I would thoroughly recommend, before it gets closed down by the US Army, you know, bombed transmitters and all that sort of thing, well worth looking at. Is that this week the figures have come out for what they call the Rajar figures for radio in Britain, and Rajar are saying, I'm not quite sure what Rajar stands for, I probably should know but I don't, that LBC is growing to record 2.2 million audience, whilst BBC Radio 4 in just 1 year has shed three quarters of a million listeners. The Today programme, which is their flagship news programme, has lost a three quarters of a million listeners in a year. What is happening to the BBC?
Depressingly, what's happening to the BBC is it's just turning into its news coverage is just largely turning into a propaganda channel for the Conservatives, and people are switching off, which is, it's good that they're switching off.
It's funny, the Conservatives have always said it's biased towards the left, haven't they? But recent university research has shown actually that there's been a bias by omission to the right. It's just
total bias to the right. And I mean, when I was kid growing up, you know,
sorry, just to correct it, the Radio 4 have lost three quarters of a million listeners, the Today programme have lost 330,000 listeners just on in 1 year. Now I mean, you know, in a few years time they're gonna have no listeners at all, so
maybe that's just for the best.
One of Corbyn's policies actually is to actually have a look at the transparency of how the BBC, which was such a one, I mean, the World Service is still absolutely fine, because I do stay up till 3-4 o'clock in the morning, and suddenly the rays of truth are beaming out again as soon as we get John Humphreys in the morning on the Today programme.
Oh God, switch off. Horrible man.
It's just definitely there, isn't it? And people are starting to understand and realise that if they want to go and look for news, I mean, I find all my news really in comedians and cartoons, and I'm finding understanding that the news coverage
well,
is really...
Well, I've got some great news for you, Fabian, because John Humphreys has announced his retirement.
Good riddance.
BBC host announces plans to quit Radio 4's Today programme. Do you remember Brian Redhead?
I loved Brian Redhead.
What's happened to these kinds of people?
I know.
The thing with Humphreys is he just doesn't seem to have the knowledge and background to really interrogate people well enough. Maybe that's why you find him a bit frustrating.
I just think, you know, we need to get back to, you know, we need to actually, you know, an incoming Labour government needs to do a couple of things when it comes to the news coverage. We need to make sure that the BBC goes back to being an impartial, trusted source.
Absolutely. We need to have a look at all those people that are appointed on the as board members.
Yep.
We need to have a look. I mean, look at the producer.
News editors,
for goodness sake,
news editors,
today
news
program.
Presenters. We need to make sure that they are people who are capable of being fair and transparent. We also need to look at media ownership. I know newspaper circulation is declining, but we need to break that up so that there are far more voices being heard in news outlets in this country.
I mean, 80% of the mainstream media is owned by a few elitist moguls and people.
Even the news, which we hear every hour on this station, is owned by a company called Comcast, which is an American company. Up until a few months ago, it was owned by Murdoch. But now it's a US company that owns the news. This is what I find so, in a way, scary about leaving the EU, is we're being brought into this American sphere.
Maybe what we need
we're
to
becoming
look-
part of the American empire.
Well, maybe we
the
need
51st state, isn't it?
Maybe what we need to be looking at is making sure that news outlets are only owned by people who are based in and paying taxes in Britain.
Good idea. Yeah.
And also limit how much you can actually have. So you can either have one news channel or a news radio channel or a newspaper
title.
So
you break the monopoly.
You break monopolies up. So you can't have one person owning loads of radio, loads of TV,
anyway,
and loads of newspapers.
We have to finish now. That's Mal Sainsbury, Labour activist, and Fabian Breckles, Labour councillor. Thanks very much for joining us. And I'm going to finish now with my favourite of Brexit songs. By a band called Europe.
This is Bristol's BCFM on 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.